3, 2, 1.
Indie!
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 444, all of the fours, and joining me today is 4 minus 2, which is 2 people. It's Rick Cowley.
Hello.
And Emily Soden.
What's up?
We are sitting here in the shadow of WWDC 2018, which none of us attended. But that's okay, because you don't need to go to conferences anymore, because you can just watch every live stream from 15 angles, and it's like you're there, only you're comfortable and there's tea.
True. And there's no hot, sweaty bodies anywhere.
Well, speak for yourself. It's pretty peaky in here. But we found this a lot with going to conferences and whatnot, because E3 is also in the process of kicking off. We're into that little event season thing. But when you go there, and I've been, and we've all been to like Gamescoms and things like that, there's the initial thrill of going there, but then also the hassle of physically cramming your way through a bunch of people. And when it comes to straight-up coverage, people have started to stay at home more and more, I've noticed, because the live streaming's got so good. Every single session, every kind of EA's talk, and then Konami's talk, and then Ubisoft's talk, they're all there being beamed. So you're seeing it in real time. It's like, it's actually easier for me to cover it here. I've got better internet and stuff like that. So it's kind of detrimental going, but you do lose out on the physical, hello, it's you, and talking to people, and occasionally scoops. So, you know, give and take. But long story short, WWDC happened. We covered it in full. There's lots of stuff to chat about regarding iOS and everything. Em, you were the person who was sort of doing the coverage, weren't you? Did you do the whole watching it?
I did, yeah. All 2 hours and 10 minutes of it.
Yeah, you took the hit for the team. But it was at a reasonable time this year in the UK, right?
Yeah, no, this year was 6 o'clock through till 8:10/15. I'm pretty sure last time it was like 11 through till 1 or something.
Yeah, you got hit with one of those all-nighters, didn't you?
Yeah, but I do. I mean, I've had Nintendo and all sorts. It's fine.
You're very good at that, being cogent at the wee hours in the morning.
Yeah, well, I like having a job, so.
Helps a lot, doesn't it? So yes, we'll be covering that business, as well as a few of the awards that were thrown out towards games that we also like. So, you know, as always, Apple follows our Pocket Gamer trends. Plus, we'll be covering new releases, including the likes of Deep Space, Only When Howling, Royal Blood, Slick Poo the Clown, don't ask, I'm going to tell you in a bit, and more. Plus, an interview with Ubisoft talking about last week's Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, how they got it onto the App Store, and why perhaps you should consider playing it. But first, it's the news. As we mentioned, WWDC has been and just about to be gone this week, 4th to the 8th of June. It's happening over there in California, and we've been keeping more than one eye trained on it to find out what's been announced. There's a pretty standard laundry list of stuff that gets covered at these events when it comes to mobile and iOS. Specifically, it's like, hey, you remember we had iOS 10 last year? Well, now there's iOS 11, and here's what it does. Stronger, better, faster, etc. And this year, frankly, is no different. So you did the kind of big rundown on it, Em. We'll just go through this point by point. We've got the announcement of iOS 12, following on from iOS 11. Surprising nobody. The nice stuff that they've said about this is improving performance on older devices, which is something that always makes my heart glad. They're talking about 40% faster on the iPhone 6, apps launching much quicker than they used to. I have an iPhone 6S, so this pleases me.
Do you remember either earlier this year or last year when it came out that Apple was like seemingly purposefully slowing down batteries from older phones to make people upgrade?
Yeah.
Yeah, this feels kind of like, yeah, I know, Davin.
Hot incisive commentary from Indy, as always. Indy being Emily's cat. Correspondent in the field, yes, Indy.
So it's just, it was quite funny for them to be like chatting on performance for older iPhones when they'd been slowing down batteries to make people, you know, either replace their batteries or upgrade.
You think this is an answer to that, a salve to that particular wound?
Yeah, I reckon this is that. It's cool, we're going to support you now, bro, sort of thing. Yeah.
Don't worry, we still love you with your old-ass iPhone 6, you absolute chancer. Mm-hmm. Apps starting up faster on older devices, that's nice. You're also going to get tweaks to search refinements in Photos, Siri shortcuts, and stuff like that. But mainly it's better performance in old things and presumably tweak the new ones as well, standard stuff. AR, which is something that they were jumping up and down about last year particularly. We've got AR 2.0, AR Kit 2. So last year they went with the AR Kit 1 saying, here's our very own Apple-baked development tool that you can use to make your AR games, fill your boots. And we've seen a bunch appear since then, beyond the likes of Pokemon Go, of course. And this year they've got AR Kit 2. The main addition is multiplayer AR. And you can see some video evidence of this. So they've got like a game where it's kind of like an Angry Birds, where you hold your iPad up at your table and there's a whole bunch of blocks, basically like a blocky fortress on a table. And then you've got a catapult and you're trying to knock it down. But there's two of you and you can wander around and you're both seeing the exact same stuff going on at the same time from your different iPads. So you're both throwing catapult balls at one another and trying to knock down each other's stuff, which, as I see it, is quite good.
Yeah, no, it opens up another area of AR gaming, doesn't it?
Yeah, because the thing with AR gaming is you do have the problem of looking like a bit of a Burke. Yeah. When you're wandering around, you know, pointing your phone at the invisible thing and everyone's looking at you going, what are you doing? So as long as you're not self-conscious, it's fine. But if you are, it's a bit like weird you doing this. As soon as you bring someone else in and there's two of you, like with your iPads trained on the same thing, it makes you look a little bit less crazy. And I think it kind of, there's a shared sort of like, we're both doing this, so this is fine. At least one other person understands what the hell I'm looking at and what's going on here.
Mm. It's kind of like when Pokemon Go first launched. Do you remember everyone who went walking in the park and there were big groups of people battling and things like that? Obviously, they weren't doing it on the same screen or seeing the same thing, but it was kind of that shared experience.
Yes, and you feel a little bit validated and a little bit less daft if there's a whole bunch of other people going, hey, I found a thing, you found a thing. This is great. We're all crazy together. Have you been tempted by the AR stuff? Have you actually done any AR gaming, Rick?
Not especially, no. I think it'll come together eventually. I don't even know if AR is really a good gaming thing. There's cool stuff like there was that museum app that if you used AR, it would show penguins and they would lead you to the museum. Wherever you were in the city.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a cool thing that was a few years ago before any of this kicked off. I only saw pictures of it on Tumblr. I don't remember what museum it was or anything like that. But I think that kind of application is cool and sort of adding an extra layer to something that ordinarily would be kind of dull. Whereas games in themselves are designed not to be dull. And so adding AR on top of that is just sort of extra gloss for no particular reason. My other point that I would like to raise about AR Kit 2 specifically... is that multiplayer AR has already been done. So I'm not sure what's actually being added here.
Well, I think this is just their own thing, isn't it? This is their version or their engine that allows you to build it.
Yeah, I think it's probably just going to make it easier for developers to do this because there's already a game, Smash Tanks, I think it's called, which is from the Dashy Crashy people.
And I think that I've talked to them. Yeah,
and that is multiplayer AR and you do it through your own device. So there's two people seeing the exact same thing and things are happening, I think, in real time. So it kind of has been done already, so I guess the only actual improvement here is that they've baked it into the code and the engine and stuff. This whole conference to me, like their big keynote seemed kind of like, oh, we're doing this, and it's like, yeah, but it's not that interesting, is it?
It all feels like additions and iterations. So we've got AR Kit 2 following on from AR Kit 1. We've got the Animojis and the Memojis and all those things, which when they released the iPhone X, that was a big deal. Like, hey, you can animate your own emojis and it captures your face and steals your identity and all that lovely stuff. And so the announcement at WWDC was, hey, you know those Animojis? Well, now, tongue detection.
Tongue detection is the most terrifying thing.
Right, guys? So now, when you're turning your face into a dog, you can go... and the doggy will also go...
I was watching the thing as they were, like, demoing it. And the actual sort of tracking of the Memojis was so precise.
Scary?
Yeah, it was there was some serious uncanny valley stuff going on there. Like, it was terrifying to watch how much of your face it tracked and all the little ticks and stuff and eyebrow raises and smiles and this kind of thing. And now you're doing it on an actual face rather than just animals. And it's like, when do we stop? where do we draw a line and go, actually, this is really creepy. We shouldn't be doing this anymore.
It is very impressive. You're right. It is very uncanny valley. And you wonder where they're storing all this information and what they're doing with the wireframes that they've taken of your faces.
One thing I would absolutely love to see is in, like, police procedurals in the future, because I've been watching a lot of Elementary lately.
Okay.
Sherlock Holmes one, and they always introduce sort of the technology of the week kind of thing, and there's always a crime built around that, and I can't wait for there to be, like, a police show where someone commits a crime, but they try and, like, their alibi is that they send a Memoji using someone else's face on their phone to somebody else, and it trips them up for ages and this kind of thing. I can 100% see that happening.
Yeah, it's the future, man.
I've been watching more Westworld, and you know that they're storing all of your likenesses for the eventual farm that they're going to be making. They're going to be building Rick's and Emily's.
Nobody wants to build me.
Yes, they will. They want stuff to abuse, mostly in Westworld, judging by what I've seen, so that's what they'll do. It doesn't matter. If, like, no one wants to build me, someone will want to punch you to death, Rick. Don't worry. There's this room in Westworld for everybody.
There'll be a queue if that happens.
So that's the Memoji thing. Again, Apple Watch and Apple TV, minor stuff. You're going to be getting Dolby Atmos on Apple TV, so good. And now, the new WatchOS 5, the big feature is adding walkie-talkie mode, which is... that's just a phone, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's literally what I thought when I was watching it. I was like, you can just make a phone call, right?
Yeah.
I thought that's what... I already thought that Apple Watches did this. I already thought that you could... that there was a mic in there and that you could use it, like, as a intermediary between your phone and you, and you could just, like, talk to that with your phone in your pocket. I didn't realise you couldn't do that.
I think you can, can't you?
Well, apparently you can now.
I swear to God, like, there was that woman wakeboarding, wasn't there, in one of the conferences, and she was calling on the sea.
Right, yeah.
And just chatting through her watch.
So presumably this walkie-talkie function is, like, it's not using, like, your call plan or anything. Maybe it's just through data. So it's like a local thing, maybe? Or it's like a WhatsApp thing?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But either way, you can talk to your watch now like a mental if you want to. Great. That's sort of it. So it wasn't particularly, like, revelatory, and there wasn't anything where you're like, wow, my God, other than the tongue thing. So that's WWDC 2018 for mobile. Anyway, a couple of nice things we did notice, though, which we mentioned, was the Apple Awards, the design awards they put out, which tend to favour games that are really, really pretty. But I can't disagree with the choices that they've made, you know. So, unsurprisingly, we've got the likes of Florence turning up there, which we very much like. That very, very short narrative game, which is all just, you know, it's barely a game, but it's a lovely little story well told. So that got an award. You got Alto's Odyssey. Again, that's not a shock. I'm pretty sure that Alto's Adventure won a design award as well, back in 2015 or whenever it was. Inside Game, the spiritual successor to Limbo, won an award. I always feel a bit conflicted about when those games win awards when they are obviously console games that have just later been ported over, you know? Because, yes, it's obviously brilliant and everything, but and it exists on the App Store, so they're right. But it's not like a game that exemplifies touchscreen or mobile gaming, really.
It's not really a mobile game. It just is a game on mobile.
Yeah. It's like if they gave it to, like, the GTA ports or something. Yeah. You're like, I mean, yeah, obviously GTA is really good, but it's not really touchscreen gaming. Anyway, but Odmah also got a nod, which is great, because I feel like this didn't get the love it deserved.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but I thought this was superb. And even just judging by, you know, because you can track review numbers and like, the video got, like, a bunch more hits than the average ones do. But looking online, and it was like our review is obviously the most hit review by quite some way online, but even then, like, it wasn't loads and loads. I thought people might be more excited, the kind of people who are like, oh, I'm so sick of free-to-play gaming, and oh, I want a proper real platformer that works well and that looks good and it's a premium price and blah blah blah. And it's like, this is exactly all of this. Here is your answer. Why is it not getting more noise, getting more attention? But shrug. It's really good, and all of these games, interestingly, all of the ones that won the awards, all five of them, all premium games, winning their design awards. I don't know whether that's a weird conflict of interest for the App Store ecosystem. Where are all the rewards for the free-to-play ones that make all the money?
Maybe they should bring out like their own awards section.
So instead of the Apple Design Awards, you put it alongside the Apple Frustratingly Compulsive Awards.
It's not like the free-to-play ones actually need the attention, though, because they're already making tons of money. So
true.
If anything, I like the Design Awards because they highlight specific games like Odmar, which is saying didn't get as much attention. And they say, look, here are some games you missed, and they are premium, and you should buy them, and we think they're amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
And you get that seal of approval. So, I don't know.
Well, all of those games mentioned, including Frost, which was the other one in the list, which I haven't actually played yet and I would like to have a look at, are all reviewed and available at App Store. So if you are interested in having a look at it, check out the PG reviews and our reviews before you buy it. But we sign off on all of them. All good games. So fair play, Apple. Well done. You copied us yet again. Might and Magic is a series that's seen many incarnations over the years. Rather than a first-person adventure like Dark Messiah or the old-school tile-based combat of Might and Magic X Legacy, Elemental Guardians comes to mobile in the form of a free-to-play hero brawler. I'm joined today by producer Sergei Bahano.
Hello.
And creative director Tungi Palier.
Hi.
So, Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, it's been out for a week or so now, I guess?
Yep. Yeah, a week.
We've played it. We've already done the review for this one before we reached out to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
And we liked it in the context of, you know, these kind of free-to-play hero brawlers, of which there are a lot on the App Store. These kind of games where, you know, you have between 3 and 5 fighters on your side, and then you're just lining up against others and battering them down, upgrading, and so on and so on. I ask this of a lot of people who I talk to in mobile, but how do you try and set your game apart from a lot of other competition within quite a saturated genre?
I would say that since the very beginning, the idea was clear. We wanted to have a turn-based battle. And very quickly into the development, we got the idea of adding like the young wizard avatar, let's say. I think that's one of the things that pushes us away from the competition. Actually, it's a pretty good idea. We want to develop it even further. In the battle phase, I think it was the main breakthrough for us.
To confirm for people listening who maybe haven't played the game, as well as having the heroes that are lined up in the front couple of rows, there is a caster, like a wizard, standing behind them, who also kind of charges a passive attack over time, and then after a while, they can launch this big area effect attack. And they can also be customized and upgraded separate from the main team.
Exactly.
It's true that there are many games in the stores, but what we wanted to do is like, for our game is we wanted to have like a higher production values. So for all the people who played, you will see the first thing you will notice is the graphics are bright, they are colorful, and they are great. So we wanted to do something that stands above the rest. So I would say that the graphics are also one of the selling points. Plus, since we are coming last, let's say, we have seen what the competition does. We took what they do best, in our opinion, so we're trying to improve that model. And, of course, we have like a ton of stuff coming soon, which is going in the same direction.
This is more of a mid-core RPG, I would say, on mobile, than a straight-up idle RPG, which there have, again, been a lot of recently. So it does feel like, even though you do have an auto mode in the battles, where you can set it and let the AI take over for you, you are still activating attacks, and there is the rock-paper-scissors elemental system where you can choose which one you want to attack to maximize the effectiveness.
Yep.
So it is a little bit more engaged than some of the other more casual RPGs out there. How do you strike the balance between excluding people by making it a little bit too complicated and too granular versus just making it extraordinarily easy and you might as well not be playing, you just let the computer take over?
So I think right now the market is pretty hardcore, I would say. I know that a lot of people are churning pretty fast on that type of game, like if it's too hard or if they don't understand it, they will just leave it.
Yeah.
What we did for that one is to develop an achievement system which is quite deep, actually, and which is driving you to the most important areas, teaching you how to play. And it was a good decision. It's a good tool to actually understand the mechanics, starting casual, then a bit more mid-core, and at the end, the game is pretty hardcore.
Yeah, in fact, if we take a look on the competitors, especially the Asian ones, you will see that they have like complex menus right from the start. So they teach you like a ton of stuff at the start, so you're quite lost. So what we try to do in combination with the art, because you start with cute creatures, you know, so everything is friendly, the UI, it's quite simple. So that's what we try to really capture the non-experienced RPG fans at the start. But as Tanguy said, is we can hide the fact that the game is quite hardcore. So if you want to be the best of the best on every area, it's quite hardcore as the competition.
So explain the glyphs, because that's the system that you're using in order to kind of, you basically collect them, bolt them onto players, your characters rather, and then upgrade them individually. Why did you go for that as opposed to just, well, we're going to give you the option to level dex or level strength or something like that?
Glyphs are basically like items. So on PC RPG games, we would say you could collect the swords and shields. The problem with that is that it is a mobile game, so we have to be light on every aspect of the game, so we're going to put more models just for the sake of it. So glyphs is a solution used for many games, which is like a shortcut. So it's just a rune, a glyph, basically, that allows you to customize every single character. The good thing of this, of being an item, is that once you upgrade that glyph, you can take it out and put it to another creature. So if I have a griffin or I have a paladin, the same glyph is going to work. So if I had a sword, griffin with a sword, it would be quite weird. So that's why everyone decides to go for something generic that can work for everything. And it's quite simple and very scalable, let's say.
But at least for me, because I love strategy, I think it's the funniest part of the game. It's like the biggest strategic layer we have. So I agree, it's a bit can be a bit difficult to understand, but it's once you got it, that's when serious stuffs are starting.
Yeah, because also the glyphs, since you upgrade them and you gain like additional stats, and they are random. For me, that I have been playing since the game release, so over a year ago, I have yet to find the perfect glyph. So I'm still playing every day to see if I can get this glyph plus this upgrade, and I am lucky to have the stat I want.
Which is quite a lot of what these games are often about, rather than having a set endpoint, which is what you have with a lot of traditional game design. Certainly mobile games and free-to-play games, they need to have this kind of constantly rolling design where there isn't really an end in sight, or at least you're constantly striving for a finer perfection somewhere just over the horizon.
Definitely, and players love it, and for us it's let's say it's an easy way to give them content because it's super scalable as well.
Is there a problem that, and I understand like comic books get this kind of same criticism where a series like X-Men just runs and runs and runs, which means you never really have an end, you're always in the middle, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And that can be kind of exhausting and like slightly unfulfilling at the same time. How do you combat the kind of fatigue that sets in when you're just kind of going and going and going and going?
I guess it depends whom you ask. If we ask our more engaged player, they keep asking more and more and more content. So they ask so much that it's hard for us to actually deliver. So we have many ways to add content. It could be new creatures, which is obviously in production's values, it's more difficult to make a creature from scratch. But yeah, I might understand that there's some people who never seen seen the end. It can be frustrating, but on our experience on this kind of games, it's actually the opposite. They keep asking for more.
With the Might and Magic franchise itself, it's something that's been running for like years and years and years at this point. And as I mentioned in the intro, it's taken a lot of different forms and in a lot of different genres.
Yep.
How tough was it to cram the whole Might and Magic mythos into a mobile game, and why did you choose this particular genre to go for on mobile?
Yeah, so at the start of the project, the team had a clear approach. So we wanted like a medieval fantasy world. So on the Ubisoft side, it was we had a clear match, which is Might and Magic, due to this universe and medieval setting. So we actually pitched the idea to the IP owners, and they actually loved it. In fact, it was a surprise for us, because they even apparently they thought in the past on doing something similar, but they were waiting to someone to make a proposal. So it was us. So it was like a perfect match from the start.
So it's something they were looking to bring to mobile in the first place.
Yeah.
Speaking of ways that you are separating the game from competitors, like, you know, Summoner's Wars or something like that, there's an AR mode built into it as well. Explain the thinking behind that. What made you put that in there?
That's funny. So we knew it was possible. We didn't like it that much. It was more like, let's say, a gimmick, I would say. And then we tried it, and everyone found it super fun in the studio. And then we showed it to the, I don't know, to the press, to the some influencers, etc. And they went crazy about it.
Apple and suggested the new features, which are going to allow like
shared
environment, so that is going to unlock multiplayer options with IR. So we are super excited to see what we can do with that.
So it's out the door, and we've talked about the feedback, and presumably, as we've discussed, with it running and running, you're going to have updates coming in the future, and you're looking long term at it as a venture. Is there stuff that you've already got planned for future updates, future content additions, new creatures, that sort of thing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, we have like a plan for the years to come. The good part of being on a mobile industry is that even if you have a plan, everything can change. We had been in Sublime for a year, and the plan changed entirely on user feedback. So even if we
That's
do have...
That's why it was so long, actually.
Yeah.
So what changed specifically? What was the biggest thing where you came in, you launched the game in soft launch with the concept, and you've kind of abandoned it and gone in a different direction? What was it originally?
So if you want the explanation behind the long soft launch, actually it was long because things were going well, and not the opposite, which is where I think... The first thing we wanted to, and that took a long time, was the balancing. So we got feedback from everyone saying this creature is OP, this one should be nerfed, this one is not working, etc. And this is because we have like, at that time we had 400 creatures, and it helped a lot later on to have a well-balanced game. So I think that took a long time. People were asking for, okay, I would like some more dungeons and stuff like that. We provide them. Yeah. Then they were asking for
for guilds as well before
guilds,
the release. So
events,
we provided them.
So we did that as well, and that's the way it went. And so that was long because it was going well.
I've seen a lot of games that have appeared in soft launch and then they never get actually launched, and you assume something terrible happened.
Yeah, that's why I say that.
Well, if you are a player then of Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, make your voices heard, and we've got Sergei and Tunji. We'll be listening to you and hopefully implement whatever.
We do actually. We're on Discord, etc. So you can ask us anything, we'll answer.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you ever so much for talking to me, guys. Much appreciated. And look forward to seeing what updates you deliver in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out and about this week, as we already covered Might and Magic Elemental Guardians last week, so listen to that if you haven't already for the proper review. Let's do something we've both played. Deep Space was out this week. You and I have had a crack at this one, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry reviewed it. So it is a side-scrolling, 16-bit style platformer game, which isn't really so much about platforming as much as it is about just running along the floor. Jumping occasionally, and getting loads of enemies thrown at you. You have to go through stages, so it's a bit roguelike-y, where you die and then get thrown back to the beginning, and then the world is recreated, not massively differently, I have to say. They tend to switch direction every time. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
So instead of running left to right, you'll run right to left the next time when you respawn. But you unlock weapons as you go through to improve by collecting coins and buying the unlocks. They don't give you the weapons in your arsenal. They instead like leave them dotted around the level. So when you unlock a gun later on, because I've played a bunch of this for the review, you eventually unlock another weapon. And then I was there tapping my weapon going, right, brilliant, I want to select the new one. And I couldn't select it, and I was really confused. But then it just basically adds it as a random drop throughout the level.
Right.
And then every time you unlock a new weapon, it means there are more random weapons dotted around that you can collect. So it forces you to improvise based on the situation you're in and the weapon you currently have, which is quite good. It reminds me of that original Van Beer game that was a lot like Bubble Bobble. What was their first one? The three words? Super something or other?
Super Crate Boy?
Super Crate Boy, there you go. Super Crate Box, that's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of that in terms of, like, you will accidentally pick up weapons and be like, God damn it, you didn't mean to do that, and now you have to work with the shotgun. So I am a bit lukewarm on this because I think it's annoyingly, frustratingly hard. And I didn't get a great deal of pleasure from playing and restarting because you don't feel like you're making progress even when you are.
Yeah. There's no checkpoints or anything, which I know is roguelike to the core, but sometimes you'll get to a point in a roguelike and it'll say, okay, now you can start from here. And I didn't play it for very long, So there might be something like that further down the line. But when you're just starting out and you just go, oh, okay, here's an enemy, here's some more enemies, oh, I've died, oh, back to the start, I guess. And it's just kind of, I didn't really get into the loop of it very much. It played okay. The jumping was a bit floaty, I thought.
I find that the right and left are positioned really awkwardly. They're right down the bottom of the screen in the corner. And I was constantly overshooting that. And you can't move them, so that irritated me. They do have the persistent roguelike stuff, like when you upgrade your health, obviously that stays, and you get to go into the next run with that. And likewise the weapons, but they're randomly scattered around.
The other thing was the from the start, it has the sort of hidden electric traps. The electric traps in general just aren't clearly defined. They're quite difficult to see, so you're always sort of straining your eyes trying to see, well, is the next tile actually going to be, can I jump on that? And then sometimes they'll just pop up out of nowhere. It's like, it just feels a bit unfair.
My major complaint is that it's going for precision platformer stuff. Not in terms of having to jump across chasms, but having to jump and hit the exact right cube to avoid the electric spikes in between. And if you're going to do precision platformer on mobile, you have to properly nail it. And I don't think they do, control-wise. You have to have total faith in the controls. And there's a few people who do it right, and I'm thinking of the likes of Ravenous Games, things like the League of Evil series. They're really good precision platformers that properly make you feel like you're in control on mobile. This, controls are a little bit woolly, and that the progression is not very satisfying, so it just winds up being a bit of a pain. So we gave it 6 out of 10. Not awful, but... And it is premium, so it's like a couple of quid, which is a bit brave, considering how it plays. So Deep Space is the name of that one, which you can grab at the minute. Something else we've both played, albeit briefly, and I say played very loosely, Only When Howling, which is it's described as an interactive art piece.
Yeah, I think that's probably the closest you could get to calling it anything. It's kind of point-and-click adventure. If you wanted to stretch it into a game genre that you know and trust. So the whole game is you're presented with some screens, and they're beautifully drawn. I absolutely love the art style. It's got a kind of simple animations, and you can tell it's all been drawn by one person kind of thing. And it's kind of sketchy, but not like in a bad way. It just looks like it's come from a sketchbook kind of thing, and it's been cleaned up.
Yeah, it looks like a paint-by-numbers colouring book.
Yeah.
That kind of big, bold outlines and block colours.
Yeah, exactly. And you just kind of look at these screens and you can tap on things, and sometimes it'll change the environment and show you something neat, or you'll find these sort of weird colour circles which you then have to hold, and you get a bonus cutscene to sort of tell you a bit about this person's mind and feelings and stuff. And it's all like set in people's minds, and they're going through different stages of their lives and having difficult problems and stuff. So it's kind of vague and abstract, so it can be really confusing, and then it'll cut to, like... Because the vague abstract bits are really colourful, then it'll cut to all the black and white and the harsh reality of life and stuff like that. Which I thought was kind of, simple but neat and effective way of portraying that. And some of the storylines are kind of sad and poignant, and, you think about them and how people must be feeling, and then you actually get to go see what they're feeling in these cool abstract things. I really hope lots of people play it, because I really loved it. But I can see why people wouldn't at the same time. It's not really a game. It is definitely something that, like interactive art piece, as they say.
I struggled with it slightly, and I do like... I'm arty, nonsense person. Like, I go for this kind of stuff. And maybe it's just either gelling with the art style or something like that, and I didn't especially love the look of it, and I found the stuff that you can do to interact with... So I'm tapping the screen, wondering if anything's going to happen. And it just sort of, in some cases, would change the shade of the colours on the screen. And there's a lot of that going on. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure what impact that's having on either me or the adventure, or whether it's just like, well, here's a thing you can do while you're watching it, just to make it feel like you're involved. I wasn't sure what the purpose of it was or the impact it was supposed to have.
Yeah.
So... I, a bit of a question mark, but I've only played it for like sort of 15 minutes or so. I haven't played it through, so maybe it pays off.
It's only about half an hour long, so even if you just sort of press on through it, you get to it, the end of it quite quickly. It's short, it's sweet, it throws everything it wants to say at you in a nice condensed package. I don't think it's perfect and amazing and it's going to blow your mind and change your life or anything, but I think as a sort of small art game type thing, I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Okay. Well, It's Only When Howling is the name, and it's $2.99 and pounds on both iOS and Android at the minute. I said we'd talk about it, so we shall. Slick Poo the Clown. Right. I think you pointed this out to me, Em, like last week or something when it first appeared. So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
And I've played it now. So this is another one of those being pursued by a horrible thing in a house or around a house, and if it touches you, it kills you. The awful games of zombie tag that you wind up playing, clearly inspired by the likes of Slender Man and all of that. So I was playing Granny a couple of months back, that game that's got like thousands and thousands of 5-star reviews on the App Store and is rubbish. But it's the same thing. Granny, you wake up in a house and you have to sneak around the house and avoid Granny. And if you make a noise or whatever, she comes charging at you and you die. Slick Poo the Clown is the same thing, only you start off across the road. And it's such a strange mixture of stuff, right? Because I don't know if you've played any of this. Anybody? Anybody?
Nope.
Lucky. So you wake up in a house across the road and there's the clowns in that house, right? And you're supposed to go over there and investigate. But your bedroom that you're in, you're clearly like a kid. You get a message from your dad on what looks like a phone from the 90s. And your dad says, yeah, like, I missed you this morning. Don't do anything stupid. Don't, whatever you do, go across the road and check out what's going on in that house. Because weird stuff's going on over there, let me tell you. Also, I left my creation making machine on your desk. We haven't got a key, so if you just press the button on this machine, my experimental item creation device tool will make you a key, provided you've got the right ingredients.
What?
And it's like, what? I've never seen a kind of more like arse about face response to, right, we need to make him a mechanic where, like, we can't just give him the key. We'll have to make him the key. So how is he going to make a key? Oh, well, the dad, as well as working in an office in a regular suburban block, is also Seth Brundle from The Fly. And he makes weird, quasi-futuristic contraptions that he hasn't tested, leaves on his son's desk, and says, put some stuff in it and press the button. I hope it won't explode and kill everything. So that's a mechanic. And the reason I mentioned lawsuits earlier, because in your bedroom, there are posters over the wall of a whole bunch of what I assume are very, very well-protected IP things. So there's a Guns N' Roses Appetites for Destruction poster on the wall. There is the Truth Is Out There poster from the X-Files on the wall.
Okay.
And a bunch of other ones too. And I'm like, if anyone plays this game and has got any link to those IPs, I guarantee you that that stuff has not been signed off. So that's before we even get to the actual game bit. And the game bit is just trying to get into the house and, you know, you try the doors and you can't get in. It's all first-person perspective. And then you walk around the back of the house and all of a sudden there's a clown going, and screaming and screeching, and it runs at you and you run away and it catches you and you die. That's it. That's the game. So it's like all the other ones you've played, and it looks ropey and is ropey, and the clown isn't even scary. It's like I expected it to go like all demon face and look a bit Chucky or Pennywise or something, but no, it's just got kind of a stupid grin and shouts at you and runs like slowly and awkwardly and then kills you. And it's 99 pence or 99 cents on the App Store.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this thing exists.
Yeah. I wouldn't bother. It's not really... It's not very good. We do have some other stuff. I played very briefly Royal Blood, which is another MMORPG where you're just running through a series of combat corridors, smashing the crap out of people. You are engaged in it. It's an active one. You've got the four different attacks you can make and just targeting onto things. Stylistically, it's almost a little bit like a shrunk down Devil May Cry in how it looks. It's got that gothic architecture and people have got very long spindly legs and the running's a little bit awkward and you spend a lot of time in the air, but it looks strangely ugly, and I don't know if it seems to be running at a very low resolution. I'm running it on the iPad Air 2 and I'm running it on the iPhone 6s, and I've got a lot of games that look a lot better running on that thing, so I know it's an old device, but still it looks well shonky. But it's just another one of those. It didn't stand out particularly, especially when we were talking about things like Might and Magic, which does genuinely look good. You started playing it, didn't you, Might and Magic Elemental Guardians?
Yeah, well, I'm doing the review for it over in 148, and I gave it a go sometime this week, I think. I played like an hour of it, and I was really surprised to see that I was still going and had not hit a paywall, considering it's free to play.
Mm. Yeah, I was surprised that I didn't hate it either. This one, I'm not going to be playing again, so make of that what you will. We've also got a bunch of others which you can see on Emily's big old list. We've got the Ancients AR, which I haven't played, which is a big like AR strategy real-time game where you're guiding folks around the sea with your magic phone. I don't think it's multiplayer support yet, but it's $6.99 on either App Store. I also played a couple of things for review that may have come over from last week. So Blaze Fury, I might have mentioned it last week, was actually quite good, I thought, which is a side-scrolling shmup mixed with the tapping game. So instead of like controlling the fire button, you just drag your finger across the enemies and the screen kind of freezes while you do it, then release, and then your ship just lays into all those enemies. And then once they've all been eliminated, you can then do that again. So you are involved, but not in the standard way. And it's a way of taking a hardcore genre and making it sort of casual. But in a way that I found oddly satisfying. Because you know when you just target a load of things, and then when you pull your finger off, suddenly all hell breaks loose. And it feels like, you know, R-Type charging up a shot. And you're like, ooh, bah, and then carnage. That feeling's always quite nice. It's actually a feeling that I got with, you know, Mass Effect, the original one, where the original series, where you can pause the action and jump the different characters and bring up the wheel and go, right, you, Liara, you're going to do a false blast here. You go to Tali, you fire your shotgun here, and then you go over there and you do that. Right, everybody ready? Go! And you release, and then carnage breaks out. I always quite liked that. It was a fun way of playing. Some people really didn't like it because it broke up the flow, but I always quite like doing it from time to time because it's just like, and go! And then massive amounts of slowdown while everyone does a superpower at the same time. And it felt quite good. I liked it. It was good. So that's available. Space Pioneer, I think we talked about last week, but I liked that. That was fun. Good stuff. And the one I did review was Turbo Soccer Mobile. Because we are heading into soccer season now. All you soccer fans, I must stop saying soccer.
Please stop saying soccer.
Yeah, come on. It's football.
Yeah.
It's going to be football in my house on my screen. Because my wife likes watching the World Cup. She doesn't follow football generally, but she does like the World Cup.
I mean, you've got to like the World Cup.
I don't.
How can you not like the World Cup?
I don't like football.
You've got to support your country.
I've got to do no such thing,
as we
thing,
go
mate.
Out against the rest of the world and prove to them that we can survive on our own without the EU by way of having a great football team that will probably get knocked out of qualifiers.
Absolutely, yeah, and have no impact on the rest of the world like we're about to. Yeah, so but that this Turbo Soccer game mobile is a like it's a bunch of cute quick time events. Basically, you're always running on goal. You hit about 3 quick time events to dodge past people, do a tackle, get out of the way, and then you swipe to take a shot on goal. And it's various variations of that. It's all right for about 15 minutes, and then it doesn't really go anywhere. But you can see the review for that on AppSpy and Pocket Gamer 2. Anything I missed?
I don't think so.
Nope.
Doing good. What about Indy? Indy, anything I've missed?
No, she's buggered off now.
Oh, right. She's done her damage.
I've done my job. I've disrupted the recording and created havoc, and now I'm going to go and lick my bumhole.
You won't. We've all been there. You won't know this, listeners. She came in and she filibustered the podcast by meowing a lot and then pressing the space bar on Emily's keyboard and stopping her recording. So there's a magic edit point somewhere in this episode where we had to restart because the cat was like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of your shit. Banging on about games all the time. Where's my f***ing whiskers?
This is all true. And you'll never know.
You'll never know. So yeah, listen out for the edit point. But that'll do it for this week. Thank you all for listening, you lovely lot. Come back and join us next week. More podcasting for this week and next week. There might be a week in the future where I won't be here because I'll be somewhere else on a honeymoon. Ooh. On my honeymoon, not someone else's honeymoon.
I was going to say, elaborate maybe.
Yeah, well, I like stealth dropping into people's honeymoons. It's funny. they get quite uppity, you'd be surprised. But apart from that week, at least the next 2 weeks will definitely be here, so tune back in for more mobile news and stuff. We will see you then. Love you lots. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.